take my run, then I'll go fishing. I'll get your river flowing, I'm always in the knowing. It comes to giving pleasure, I'm every woman's treasure. I came to work your body, so let me do my job. I've never been laid off, but I'm still paid off. Cause now I'm making records, now I'm making tapes. Steady busting suckers in bunches like grapes. Making all the pace, scooping up the loot. Putting suckers on the run, pull my gun and then I shoot. I never been a front, I never been a fool. I got a natural skill, for that I thank the Lord. Cause I feel blessed, I'm casually dressed. I always got my gun, but I never wear a vest. I'm quick on the draw, like a horse named McCraw from the cartoon. Boom, shalak, lock, boom, shalak, lock, boom. All right now, boom, shalak, lock, boom. Everybody, boom, shalak, lock, boom.
Guess what, everybody? I'm back! Yes, after a month-long holiday hiatus slash dangerous booze binge down south in the States there, In the Cage with Bards returns to its live format, bringing the MMA news to the masses here in Vancouver and all points over the interweb. And because it's better late than never, I am still Carlin Bardsley. The landscape of the MMA world is ever-changing, and there's a lot to discuss. A local promotion, Battlefield Fight League, had their most recent card this past weekend. The new incarnation of the Vancouver Athletic Commission met for the first time. The coaches for the next season of The Ultimate Fighter and the likely main event for UFC's return to Vancouver have been announced. All this and more, so let's get to it, shall we? Battlefield 5 Duel took place Saturday night at the River Rock Casino in Richmond and had what I heard was an excellent night of fights. Wasn't able to make it, unfortunately. And they even had Big John McCarthy in attendance. Big John was in town for his MMA judging course. Apparently he was invited by Bill Mahood and the fine folks at MMA BC and decided to take in some local MMA while he was here. The card itself headlined by two title fights, with a new featherweight champion being crowned in the main event as Gary Manjot earned a hard-fought decision victory over Cam DeLearn to become the first ever Battlefield Fight League featherweight champion. All judges scored the fight 48-47 to give Manjot the unanimous decision victory. In the semi-main event, Jason Brooks held on to his welterweight title by defeating Ash Smash Mashringi with a combination of a mounted triangle choke and strikes at 259 in round one. The rest of the card, well, it went as follows. Jeremy Kennedy over Oren Hanscom by unanimous decision. Stuart DeLerm submitted Bryce Gujan by rear naked choke, 231 into round two. Adam Santos defeated Rick Pierce by TKO due to strikes, 211 into round one. Marco Cafiero defeated Jason Keller by TKO, round three, 227 the time there. TKO due to ear explosion injury. Yes, I said ear explosion injury. Cafiero caught Keller with a left hook in the third that caused Keller's cauliflower ear to explode, with the same thing happening to Kazushi Sakuraba recently in Japan's Dream promotion. It leads me to wonder one thing: who's next? After all, I'm always told these things happen in threes. Elsewhere on the card, Ryan Christopher submits Jesse Shim by armbar, 32 seconds into round one. Eli Wise defeats Hans Pangalingan by KO in just 6 seconds into round one. Leo Xavier submits Chris Everett by armbar, 217 into round two. Jer Kernelson defeats Jesse Wierzbowski by punches TKO 8 seconds into round two. Ryan Allen defeats Ben Henderson by TKO punches at 20 seconds into round one. Kirk Seed summits Jordan Manning by a guillotine. 144 in round one. Jesse Bird defeats Andre Silva by unanimous decision. Tony Hewn defeats Hovig Stepanian. Knockout 11 seconds into round one. And Andrew Valiquette submits Clay Ayres by rear naked choke, 235 again in round one. The promotion awarded two Fight of the Night awards in what was, clearly a fun night of fights. Lots of variances in the ways to win there and the times. It looks like they covered the map that way. The one fight of the night went to the five-round war of Gary Mangione and Cam Delorme, and the other went to the co-main event, Jason Brooks and Ash Mashirangi, who had one of the most exciting rounds our province has ever seen. KO of the night went to Eli Wise of Impact MMA in Nanaimo for his one-punch KO of Hans Pangalinan, and submission of the night went to Ryan Christopher of West Coast BJJ in Port Coquitlam for his armbar of Jesse Shim. Again, fun night of fights, and we can expect even more of the same when Battlefield 6 happens again at the River Rock Casino in Richmond, March 19th. Also locally, the Vancouver Athletic Commission held its first meeting of the new committee, which has longtime city bureaucrat Dave Rudberg as its chairman. There are a couple of exciting new additions to the committee, though, which will serve as a positive for local MMA fans. Friend of the show, Mike Patnod, the former chairman of the North Vancouver Athletic Commission and head of Spartan Fighterwear, and also Jonathan Tweedale, a commercial litigation lawyer here in our fair city that is a noted MMA supporter and acted as former chairman Mirko Mladenovic's legal advisor during his clashes with city staff last year. The minutes from the meeting are not yet available online, but the mood towards MMA seems to have changed from flat-out refusal to a cautious optimism. Rudberg termed last year's U event here as a success, which, you know, is the first time anyone from the city has said anything like that, but added there were several things he'd like to see change should the UFC return, but no word on what those things were. The commission also heard from a delegation from MMABC, the organization that provides safeguarding regulation for amateur MMA events. The delegation consisted of a trifecta of Vancouver MMA royalty, UFC veteran Bill the Butcher Mahood, referee Kevin Dornan, who officiated in UFC's maiden voyage here, and local MMA legend Paul the Mauler Lazenby. Mahood gave a presentation on MMABC's background and mission, and the commission seemed open to the idea of MMABC becoming the official supervisory body for amateur MMA in the city, with the commission saying they want to hear and see more from MMABC. This itself is a major progressive step from previous responses from City Hall, who have either been extremely negative to the sport or give the illusion of support but wind up either being inconsequential or downright punitive. The new attitude of the VAC was also apparent at the Big John McCarthy MMA judging course over the weekend, as commission members Rudberg, Tweedale, and Dr. Jerome Yang all attended the informational part of the course, ostensibly to learn more about the sport and its techniques from one of the best in the business, really. I don't say this very often when it comes to anything relating to Vancouver City Hall and MMA, or quite frankly, just Vancouver City Hall, but I, too, am cautiously optimistic. Yes, I said it. We'll be back with a look at the new coaches for The Ultimate Fighter and the possible main event for Vancouver's UFC return right after this.
Every year, for some time now, CITR Radio in Vancouver and a few independent and college radio stations around the globe have worked to give modern art a transmitter. The concept of giving art a birthday was introduced by French-born artist-slash-peacenik Robert Filliou. In 1963, he asserted that 1 million years ago, there was no art. But one day, on the 17th of January to be precise, art was born when someone dropped a dry sponge into a bucket of water. 24 hours of radio art will broadcast midnight to midnight, January 17th, on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver and online at citr.ca.
Liveband.com is Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar.
New shows are added daily by the city's most active promoters, musicians, and by the driving force of the music scene, the fans. LiveVan.com's listings are different because they are integrated with profiles updated by bands and business owners as they promote upcoming events. Check out the archives to see how closely we've worked within the community to put on the shows you love. Visit LiveMusicVancouver.com for the latest independent and major label event listings. LiveVan.com, Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar.
Welcome back to In the Cage with Bards here on 101.9 CITR. It has been announced that the coaches for the upcoming season of the long-running Spike TV reality series The Ultimate Fighter will be none other than heavyweights Brock Lesnar and Junior Dos Santos, who will match up at the end of the season. While that's a great fight on its own, what makes it of particular interest to Vancouverites is that the series will end June 4th, with the finale taking place in Las Vegas, as is tradition. The next week is the all-but-announced return of the UFC to Vancouver, June the 11th. Traditionally, the two coaches have always fought at the next pay-per-view after the TV season finishes. We saw it last year here with Chuck Liddell and Rich Franklin, and I don't see why it would be any different this time around. So it appears that, in fact, the UFC's return to our fair city will be headlined by the UFC's biggest pay-per-view draw, the esteemed Mr. Lesnar. I can actually hear scalpers salivating as I say those words. Listen, you may be able to hear it too. Could you hear it? I could. Back to the show itself, I read an article on BleacherReport.com that suggested that Brock will be the worst Ultimate Fighter coach of all time. To me, that seems patently absurd, as the man may still be a relative neophyte to MMA, but he is an NCAA National Wrestling Champion, and I'm sure will be showing up with capable assistants. While the article does bring up some salient points, namely his lack of experience and the fact that you can't teach Lesnar's best attributes, size and strength, it does completely discount anything Lesnar may be able to teach the prospects about wrestling, which of course is a major component in the sport of mixed martial arts and the base of many of its top athletes. What isn't known is whether Lesnar will be a more active, hands-on type of coach like we've seen with Randy Couture, Matt Hughes, Tito Ortiz, and others, or whether he'll be more of a sparring partner that offers advice and wisdom like George St. Pierre was, or whether he'll be mentally checked out from the process altogether and just hang out with Tiki Gosen, as Rampage Jackson did. Lesnar may come in either highly motivated or disinterested, as he went into seclusion after his brutal loss to current heavyweight champion Cain Velasquez in October, and was rumored to be looking out for a way out of his UFC contract to go back to Vince McMahon and do WrestleMania. Dana White squashed the WWF rumors, but it remains to be seen how focused Lesnar will be and how his notoriously media-shy nature will be able to tolerate cameras following him around for weeks of filming. One concrete advantage Lesnar will have is communication. Everyone on his team will be able to understand exactly what he's saying at all times. While Dos Santos himself has said, "My English isn't 100% yet, but I will do my best, and I am sure, and I will do well." End quote. Well, at least Zagano's trying. I'll give him that much. He also said that he'll be bringing boxing coach, boxing coach Luis Dorea and Muay Thai coach Billy Scheib from his Black House team, the team which also claims Anderson Silva, Jose Aldo, and the Nogueira brothers as members. Dos Santos then adds, and the wrestling coach could be Rodrigo Artojiero, who is very good and speaks both Portuguese and English with helps with communication," end quote. So while obviously the level of instruction Dos Santos and his team will be able to provide is not an issue whatsoever, it looks like even Dos Santos is concerned that the level of communication may be. While Dos Santos is bringing his A-list squad from Brazil's Black House, Lesnar has remained silent so far on who his choices may be. One can speculate he would be bringing along his head trainer, Marty Morgan, who competed in the 96 Summer Olympics in Greco-Roman wrestling and also coached Lesnar at the University of Minnesota. Another choice may be an MMA pioneer in Eric Paulson, who Lesnar brings to his Death Clutch camp to help prepare him for his fights. Paulson is trained in many disciplines. He's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu under Higan Machado, also black belt in judo and taekwondo, a full instructor in Bruce Lee's martial art Jeet Kune Do, a noted Muay Thai expert, and recently published a book on the history of American submission wrestling. He's also a veteran of the Shudo promotion in Japan and the old Extreme Fighting promotion here, or not here, but down in the States. He's fought such legendary names as Matt Hume and Carlos Newton, and could be a great mentor for the prospects Lesnar chooses. I'll go as far to say it's almost a no-brainer for Lesnar to bring Paulson in if he's available, but then again, I'm not Brock Lesnar. I do suspect he'll bring in a qualified staff, though, as long as he steers clear of names like his training partner John Madsen or The Undertaker. We'll be back with more in the cage after this quick break.
It's only a dream. Power Core. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Wow, that was creepy, wasn't it? Good show, though, Power Cord. But the promo even scares me. But we're back with more In the Cage with Pards here on CITR. This Saturday night has UFC offering up a free show on Spike TV. It's the second Fight for the Troops card taking place in a military base in Fort Hood, Texas, with the event taking place to raise awareness and funds for the Intrepid Fallen Heroes Fund, a nonprofit charity that helps veterans and families of veterans. The event was to be headlined by Evan Dunham versus Kenny Florian, but with Florian pulling out due to a knee injury, his spot was taken by Melvin the Young Assassin Gallard. This is a big fight for Dunham. He was 11-0 before losing a ridiculous split decision call to Sean Sherk his last time out at UFC 119, which, even though he was robbed of a victory, did earn him Fight of the Night honors. Dunham is looking to get back on the winning track and get back into the mix of contenders at 155 pounds, but standing in the southpaw from Extreme Couture's way will be Gallard, who has voiced his intention to become the UFC lightweight champion by the end of 2011. Gallard is currently riding a 3-fight win streak and will look to take Dunham apart on the feet. Dunham has said he's not going to go shot for shot with Gallard and instead will try to give him a look Gallard hasn't seen before. Both men will have a great corner, as Dunham will have the legendary Randy Couture with him, and Gallard will have the Yoda of mixed martial arts, Greg Jackson, in his corner. The co-main event will see a heavyweight slugfest between Ultimate Fighter Season 10 alumni Matt Mitrione and a Canadian making his return to the octagon, Tim the Thrashing Machine Haig. Mitrione is best known for his antics during his run on the Ultimate Fighter, which earned him the nickname Meathead, term of endearment, I'm sure, and also being the man that ended Kimbo Slice's run in the octagon with a victory over the Bearded One in Montreal last year. Mitrione has been working with Duke Rufus, which can do nothing but improve his stand-up, which, when you couple that with his impressive reach, could spell trouble for the Canadian. Mitrione is also coming off a win off Joey Beltran, who holds a victory over Haig. Haig, for his part, is coming back to the UFC after his last run, which saw him come away without a victory and being on the dubious end of history, as he was on the receiving end of what is in the UFC's record book anyway, the quickest knockout ever at 7 seconds at the hands of Todd Duffy. Since his release from the UFC, he's put back-to-back impressive KO wins over UFC veterans under his belt here in Canada and gets another shot at the big show. Haig is coming in determined and ready to throw down, and I'm thinking this one does not go to the judges. In other Canadian content on the card, London, Ontario's Mark the Machine Hominick takes on Ultimate Fighter veteran George Roop. Dana White has already said that if Hominick is victorious and escapes uninjured, he will get a title shot at featherweight champ Jose Aldo on the April card at Toronto's Skydome. Yeah, I know, but it's always going to be the Skydome to me. Hominick is already even talking about it, which could be a mistake, as Roop is the last guy you want to look past. Roop's coming off a Fight of the Night winning split draw with Leonard Garcia, and most recently a KO of the night for his head kick stoppage of the Korean zombie Chang Sung Jun. He is also ridiculously large for a 145er. He stands in at 6'1". Rupen Hominick have trained together in the past under Canadian MMA guru Sean Tompkins. While Rupe is no one to look past, Hominick is the favorite with his excellent kickboxing and cardio for days. The man known as the Machine is riding a four-fight win streak, with the last two coming over veterans Yves Jabouin and Leonard Garcia. If Hominick can remain focused on the task at hand, he may well get that title shot at Aldo in Toronto. Another heavyweight slugfest tied for the card is Pat H.D. Barry returns to the cage to take on Joey the Mexicutioner Beltran. Barry is an outstanding kickboxer. He's got a lot of K-1 experience and even fought in Chuck Norris's World Combat League, which is interesting, if nothing else. Where Barry has struggled is on the mat. His two losses in the UFC have both been by submission. Most recently was here in Vancouver to Mirko Krokop, and previously to Canadian and also guy on the card, Tim Haig. This is, you know, getting to be like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon with all these guys, isn't it? Barry was up at Brock Lesnar's Death Clutch camp to assist Lesnar with his striking, so it stands to reason that Lesnar may have shown him a thing or two about wrestling as well. Barry has the advantage on the feet, but that may not matter to a guy like Beltran, who loves to stand and bang, will not be intimidated. Beltran says he got too focused on his opponent's trash talk and got off his game plan in his last fight, a loss against Matt Mitrione. See, it's all 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon on this card. This is kind of interesting. At any rate, both men want to brawl. Barry's the better striker, and he'll probably take the victory. Opening the card will be a lightweight scrap between Cole Miller and moderately handsome Matt Wyman. Miller's a slick jiu-jitsu practitioner from American Top Team who has recently been decrying those who stall and fight not to lose in the octagon as opposed to fighting to win. Amen, brother. Miller is a lot of fun to watch on the ground. He's won submission of the night honors his past two trips in the octagon and three times overall. He faces another exciting fighter in Wyman, who has three Fight of the Night honors to his credit, although two of them came in decision losses to Jim Miller and Canadian Sam Stout, respectively. Although Wyman has been comfortable exchanging on his feet, he still has a wrestling base, and it will be interesting to see how this fight plays out on the ground. If Wyman is able to maintain top position and unleash ground and pound on Miller, the fight may be his. But if Miller is able to secure a limb, it may well be another submission of the night for his mantle and his bank account. On the undercard, recent Ultimate Fighter cast member and guillotine choke wizard Cody McKenzie. He's stepping in to take on by far his toughest challenge in accomplished veteran Eve Edwards. The affable Alaskan McKenzie. Seriously, how can anyone not like this guy? He's just got a great personality. He's won 11 straight fights via his McKenzie team, so it's no secret what Edwards has to look out for. Edwards is a crafty veteran and, quote, thug-jitsu practitioner, who is once the uncrowned champion of the UFC's lightweight division before falling on hard times. Edwards is currently experiencing a career renaissance and has gone 5-1 in his last six, including a win over John Gunderson in his return to the UFC in September. Edwards has a massive experience advantage, and if he can avoid the guillotine and keep pace with a much younger McKenzie, he may be able to get the W and send McKenzie back to Palin land. The other undercard fight that catches my interest is the second fight of former WEC featherweight champion Mike Brown in the UFC as he takes on dangerous Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt Rani Yaya. Brown was heralded in the featherweight division after defeating the face of WEC Uriah Faber for the title, but Brown has been running through a tough stretch, going 3-3 in his last six fights. But while his record has taken a few hits, Brown remains a tough-as-nails, durable wrestler who is a difficult matchup for anyone in the division. In the other corner, Yaya is moving up to 145 after losing his last two at bantamweight, but despite that, he is the owner of a deadly submission game, with 14 of his last 15 victories coming by way of the tap-out, including a victory over Mark Hominick. This is another classic versus wrestler versus jiu-jitsu matchup, rather. And being that Brown will carry a size advantage into the cage with him and hasn't been submitted in over 5 years, that's where my money's going. Also, the prelims can be seen on Facebook simply by going to the UFC Facebook page at facebook.com/UFC and clicking the like button. While you're there, you may as well go to this show's Facebook page at facebook.com/inthecagewithbards. Of course, Bards spelled B-A-R-D-S for the uninitiated. And like that, too. Yeah, it's a cheap plug, but whatever. And that's about it for me. As I said, visit the show's Facebook page, and you can email us at inthecagewithbards@hotmail.com with questions, comments, criticisms, love letters, and death threats. And it feels great to be back. And on that note, let's head out on a song by fellow Canadian Sebastian Beck, who actually hails from my hometown of Peterborough, Ontario. He's got Axl Rose with him, actually, on this track. A cover of the old Aerosmith tune, Back in the Saddle. We'll be back next week. And until then, the bell has sounded.
I'm riding, the sickness gonna rattle.